Afternoon. How we doing? All energized? Conference? You got food? We're good? Yep. Now it's that after you eat and then you're all tired and stuff. That part of the day. So welcome. It's actually ASP.NET Core Deep Dive, not specifically MVC. I should fix that. And I am Rachel Appel from Microsoft. Pretty easily Googleable, but you can just go to rachelappel.com, and pretty much anything that is important about me is at that website. Slides and codes and all that good stuff. If you hear it anywhere else, it's probably just a rumor. It's actually probably true, but I'm going to say it's a rumor anyway. So today, a couple of randomly selected topics to go deep into. We'll take a look at an overview of ASP.NET Core, and I'll cover a few of the changes and things that didn't change, just so we have a little bit of background information. Then I'll go into the command line, take a look at a little bit of hosting, middleware, and then tag helpers, because you know, we don't want to ignore the client side for too long and spend all that time on the server. So that's our random topics for today. Of course, there's a lot more out there, but this should get us started. If we want to, we go to just .net, because that's not a confusing URL at all, right? .net. Or if you go to docs.asp.net, you now are redirected to the docs.microsoft.com. So you may have noticed there's a kind of a big brouhaha going on with documentation. So we're putting it all in one place and making it awesome so you can actually get your information. Documentation is a first-class part of the products now. Finally, right? So Mr. Guthrie's on board and said, we got to do this. So that's what we're doing. So docs.microsoft.com or docs.asp.net sends you to the same place, which is your ASP.NET content for all things ASP.NET, core and the older stuff. Of course, it's all open source, so you can go to GitHub and download the entire repo and then go ahead and start making pull requests, right, so you can participate as well. So how many folks are actually making pull requests to public stuff? We got a couple. It's awesome. Fantastic. So what's new? As if these are really the only new things. A few things are new. So the project structure has changed a bit. If you've opened Visual Studio 2015, you've probably noticed some new files. Some JSON files, and different ways to configure. You may have noticed a new directory structure as well. And we kind of expect this. With new versions, usually the project gets manipulated a bit. So we'll take a look at those throughout this talk. Command line, because in 2016, everything old is new again. And that would be the command line. So for a long time, we had some developers who were hardcore command line, and then we went into the pointy-clicky decade at Microsoft. And now we're back to the, we're real programmers and we only use the command line. But no, we have some pointy-clicky stuff too at Microsoft. So we'll be half and half maybe for the next decade. Middleware is kind of a new thing. I love the middleware components. It's all about the middleware in ASP.NET. All these cool little components, right? We're all about modular architecture and being able to take code and portions of projects, isolate them, work on them in isolation so that they don't affect other parts of the code base, and then put them back. Right? So it's part of solid principles, it's part of good programming. Loose coupling is your friend. Unless you're a high-paid consultant that comes in and messes everything up, then maybe not, because you got to make that cash. But otherwise, if you're the one who has to maintain this stuff, middleware is your friend. And there's so much middleware out there, right? It's just like almost like a little mini nougat, a little candy store. I'll have this middleware and that middleware. And if you don't like it, you can go and write your own middleware. Right? So it's middleware all the way down, even though it's in the middle. Hosting, the hosting model is a little bit different. Up to now, basically it was IIS or hit the road. right? For lack of a better term. So that's mostly how we ran. You can kind of get .NET, the older stuff, to run on some other things, but basically, if you're doing ASP.NET, you're probably on IIS. Well, you may have noticed we love things like Linux and Mac now, more than we love IIS anymore. We just decided that group of employees, we just don't like you. You're not our friends. But we'll keep you hired anyway, though, so you can write this new stuff. So we'll see the new way of working with hosting and the Kestrel server. And then since some of the views have changed, the core way of working with views in the client side has not, but there's some new cool stuff in there I would probably want to get familiar with if we're building ASP.NET software. What's not new? There's actually a lot that's not new. If we're working specifically with MVC, things like the MVC pattern is not going to change, right? So you're still going to have models and views and all that good stuff. So those things aren't changing. We just get these new cool things to add in to views. Entity framework has had some changes, but the concept of a model or view model has not. The patterns have not. So we still get to use those core principles that we would have always used. Also, .NET Core is pretty new. So being that it's a new library, think of it as almost the revolution of .NET again. Remember when .NET first came out? There was a lot of libraries that you still had to go back to the good old COM stuff. Yes, those painful days. Now, we're kind of going through this again. Right? Everything old is new again. So in .NET Core, we're mostly baked, but we have a little bit of time in the oven still to go. So the current way of doing things is just fine. You don't have to use ASP.NET Core. We will be supporting all of the .NET stuff for a long time. If your question is, when are you going to drop support, stop. No. VB6 was still supported until, like, what, just 2 years ago or something. So don't worry about that. Everybody panics every time we release something new, and then that's supported for another decade anyway. So basically that's it. Don't worry about your support. You'll have all of your .NET, like ASP.NET 4.6 and below. Still can do everything the way that you have been doing it. You don't have to run out and upgrade right away, but we're nerds and we like to. So that's what we're doing in here. So you can still use .NET, but the .NET Core stuff, there might be some pieces missing still. Right? So that's your warning. If they're not there, eventually they'll get there, or it will be replaced with something that's supposed to be new and improved. I could never quite figure out how you could be new and improved, but somehow we're doing that at the same time. So for .NET frameworks, right? You know, things like Windows desktop apps still exist? Imagine that. How old school. But nonetheless, and actually many of our control vendors that you make just little UI widgets and whatnot, actually the Windows platform, good old WinForms, is still some of the most popular software out there to buy controls and components from our vendors. Which, no matter how many times I hear this, it's still a little bit of news to me. Really? Still? Windows? But then again, I'm an ASP.NET person, and I think all things should be on the web, because it's a religion. So, for me. Windows Store, Windows Phone, all that good stuff. ASP.NET 4, still get all that. And then Core. So as far as ASP.NET 4.6 versus Core, if you see here at the very bottom of this slide, you get your compilers, your runtime components. We have new things like Roslyn, which is kind of a dynamic compilation for C#. Got a lot of language support. On top of that, we have the standard .NET framework libraries on the left. And on the right, we have core libraries. And you notice all the core stuff, like right out of the gate, is all open source. We were developing on the ASP.NET standard .NET platform for a long time before we decided open source is the new best thing to do. So now we have some OSS pieces in ASP.NET 4.6 and above. But moving forward with core, and right from the get-go, everything's OSS. So if you look at the libraries, on top of those system libraries, we do have the framework and the core libraries, standard .NET framework and .NET Core 1. And you'll notice on the top bar that the ASP.NET Core kind of spans both of those blocks. So you can actually create an ASP.NET Core web application that still uses those 4.6 framework components. So this way you can get a little bit of both as you're moving forward. And it gives you a little bit more flexibility. You're not necessarily just locked into only the core components and then missing some of the old stuff. Or just the old stuff and not being able to move forward with the new components. All right, so we could go ahead and use both of those. Actually, if we look at it in Visual Studio, I'm going to take a guess most of us have been in this dialogue. If I come in here and I pick out my ASP.NET core web application, here I could pick out a core web app with the .NET framework or with .NET Core, right? So I get those different choices there. All right, so I could go either or. Okay, the command line. Take a look at this. This is really easy, and when you think about it, there's really nothing new here. We're just exposing things that we've actually been doing for a while. You have your choice. You actually had this choice before, it's just that most people didn't take it. When you do a build or other actions in Visual Studio, there's actually command line stuff running in the background. Yeah, big secret. All right. It's just that we like to point and click at a lot of things. However, those command line utilities can be pretty handy. You don't have to go and live in the command line. However, we are engaging with folks on Linux and other platforms. They tend to use the command line a little more. So we do and have exposed those command line utilities to be a little more prominent. But you could still just do a build or run, or whenever you point and click and do the NuGet packages, the restore will run for you. All of that good stuff. But you can also use the command line. So when I come in here into Visual Studio and I look at my structure and I go into NuGet packages, that's just going to go ahead and run some of those utilities that are behind the scenes. All right. Or not even so much behind the scenes anymore. So if I wanted to create an application, I'll just find a nice little temp. Looks like a great directory for doing such a thing, right? Temp, temp2, temp3, temp, oh, I got lost, how many numbers? 4625, right? That's what a lot of folders look like. So I'll just create my app, and I'll go to the command line. And from here, I could just do a .NET new. And created a new C# project, and look, I get two files. You don't get any more lightweight than this, quite frankly. If you do a file new in Visual Studio, you get a lot of other stuff, but you don't even need to go that far. This is really all you need if you have the .NET Core libraries on the machine, and you should if it's any kind of newer Windows system. So I will get a program.cs and the good old project.json file. So what I will do is just open that up in, say, Visual Studio Code. So you could do VS Code, you could do standard VS, you can use Notepad, but Notepad's never gotten on board with that color coding stuff yet, or IntelliSense, so it kind of sucks. So I'd say go in here and use this. I mean, unless you're really into hurting yourself, then stay with Notepad. Knock yourself out, like kind of literally knock yourself out at that point. So here, I have my project.json, right? So of course, JSON is in there. Not JSON, JSON is in there. And being that I'm using Visual Studio Code, I could do things in a super lightweight manner. That is such a Microsoft phrase, isn't it? That's what happens when you get the implant, right? Yeah. So I will come in here, and like not the ones here, like the Microsoft one, and a gallon of Kool-Aid to go with it. So here's my app. I'll select that folder, and I'm just going to open it up. When I do that, Visual Studio Code says, hey, I have these other files in here. I'm going to incorporate them into my own little project. And since I'm doing that, look, there might be some dependencies. What would you like to do? This is VS Code being nice to me. I can come in here and click Restore and look for these assets to build. So I could do a Control-Shift-B. Or I can go back to my command line and just do a .NET restore. So that's the package restore. So that's the same thing that you get when you right mouse click in Visual Studio itself and do a manage NuGet packages and actually work with the packages. So that's what it's doing. And while it does that, it actually creates this extra file called the project.lock.json. So this, for most intents and purposes, we could know it's there, but we don't need to edit this file directly unless you're having some kind of really odd issue. And then I find it's probably just easier to delete it and let the .NET framework rebuild that. This lock file is used to manage the dependencies and packages while you're interacting with it, either through the command line or through the tools. So that's what that's for. For us as the developer, we're going to work in Project JSON itself and set up our dependencies in there. So here I have these. Now I could tell it, now go ahead, close those. So if I come back into Project JSON, oops, stop that. I can then start adding dependencies if I want to. So here in my dependencies piece, I can say, maybe I want Microsoft, S-O-F-T, and eventually I should get IntelliSense, but I guess today's not going to be that day. Let's see. Oh, I can't even type, so ASP.NET Core, let's see, Server, Kestrel, that looks about right. So this little thing we have called Kestrel. Oh, now I get IntelliSense. Thank you very much. Like after I type it all in. That was great IntelliSense. You're on the ball. So here, I've typed that in. I've made a change to this project.json. And when I do that, Visual Studio Code noticed right away when I did Control S and I saved it, hey, there's unresolved dependencies. Should we restore? Because we love the package restore. So I could go back to the command line and do a .NET restore, or I can just click restore, and it does it for me. So here you could see in the output, it'll go ahead and do the restoration. And then I would notice if I felt like going in there, you could look around and see what the lock file says. So now that I have this, I can then start doing some other cool things now that I have Kestrel. So Kestrel is this little web server that we have that we can start running our ASP.NET Core apps on, which is pretty cool. So with that, if I wanted to work with it, there's a couple things we could do. So I have my program. Y'all remember this from .NET 1, like the first day that .NET was released, and everybody did the file new project on a console application, and that's mostly what there was, before even web forms. Yeah, we're back to that again. So it's a console app. That's what your ASP.NET Core app is. It's a console app. So we get a public class called Program. And it has main. Good old Program main. This was there the whole time. It's just that Visual Studio and the tools did this behind the scenes for you. It's now resurfaced because of the way we manage things like the .NET command line tools, package restore, things like that, and the hosting model. All right, so here I have my main. And nice little write line in here as well. All right, so I could use my program. You'll also notice there's a startup that people generally use as well. So even though this is the program entry point in main, you will see that a lot of folks will move some of this code over into this a startup class as well. So instead of typing, I actually have, I'll pull a Julia child on us and copy and paste. Look at how fast I coded that. Yes. Because we all know everybody's just going to go to Stack Overflow and do the same thing anyway. Right. So, yeah. I admit it. So, here, in main, some things we might want to do. When the program starts, we need to do this hosting stuff. And to do that, we need what's called a web host builder. This is cool. I like this thing. And they're going to be adding some different things in with the web host builder. But for now, I just say, hey, I'm going to new up a web host builder. And to use a host, before I get too far ahead of myself, let's talk a little bit about hosting first. And then we'll actually come back to that file and configure it. So again, ASP.NET Core is just a bunch of libraries. There's not an actual host process. It's just your console app.exe. So it could be whatever you called it, your app. I forget literally what I just called that app. 5 minutes. That's the programmer's brain, right? Especially jet lag. My app, like 10 seconds, I literally forget what I did. Which is probably good, because then I don't remember code I wrote yesterday. I don't want to know. It's bad. Or .NET.exe. Imagine that. They just call it .NET.exe. That'll be fitting. The WPW3, no more of that. I mean, unless you name your app WPW3, but then you're just being weird about stuff. Just, if you're a consultant, that makes for some fun, just saying. So with hosting, it's just your console app, your executable, up in that host, that web host that we're going to build in a minute. In here, of course, we use Kestrel. And that works, it's cross-platform. Where IIS, you may have noticed, is not exactly cross-platform. So Windows, Mac, Linux, I should be able to run my web host builder and Kestrel on any of that. Now there's two steps to working with hosting. We build the host, then we run the host. And when we build the host, what we're building is this little thing called a request delegate. And when we run the host, that's when Kestrel starts running. And there's additionally Web Listener, which was that other component that I mentioned just a bit ago that we're working on so that we can have another host. And as time evolves, I suspect we'll see more people building specialized hosts, putting them in the open source libraries and repos. And of course, feel free to build your own as well if you have a valid business reason. So when we build our host, things that we need to think about is the server and services, the startup logic when we start the host, and that gives us or builds for us this request pipeline that runs through the middleware. So when we get to the middleware piece, we'll talk more about the request pipeline. And it also gives us a delegate, a request delegate. And that's what the signature of the request delegate looks like. And you'll notice the HTTP context. So that's actually you building this context. Right? You don't have to build it in a manner of saying, like, new HTTP request context or anything like that. But as you build the host with a web host builder object, it will do this for you. All right, so let's take a look at that real quick over here in code. So we have our web host builder. In this case, I've told it to use Kestrel. And then I've told it, okay, once I've done that, I'm going to configure this app. And liking lambdas, how we do, I'm going to make this little lambda to say, go ahead and whenever any calls come in, this is all we're going to do, is basically say, hello, tech days. I can't even spell that. There we go. So that'll write that out. And then it goes ahead and builds and then runs. Right? So we set up and build our host, and that's tiny. It's nice and tiny. I get this, I'm starting with nothing. It's from scratch. If I wanted to, I can start adding to that middleware. So when we get back to middleware, you see, a whole bunch of uses. I don't want to say using because that's a statement, but use statements, like use Kestrel or use environment. Oh, I love that one. You may have noticed if you've snooped around in some of the Visual Studio files, it uses the environment call to set up environmental variables, which is really cool. And it integrates with Azure in a very pleasant way. So I have these different use methods. Use a server, I'll show you that in a minute. Use content root, we'll see that. Loggers, settings, all kind of cool stuff. Right, so this allows us to build up that pipeline. So for now, we'll just keep it bare with Kestrel. And then I'm going to head and I have it configured. So that's my whole app. Right. World's smallest app, just one line. Of course, there's more configuration to the app than there is app at this point. And then I run it. All right, so I build the host, then I run the host. So if I want to run this, I can just go back to my command line. And what I'll do is instead of changing through directories, I'll just, I got to build it. I forgot to build it. So let's do a .NET build. Yep, what we would expect for a build output. Actually, I would have expected an error is normally what I get whenever I build. So look at that. No errors. That one line app. Success. So now, here we go, cool stuff. Yeah, we've seen this, right? Build debug.NET Core app. And in here, your DLL, PDB, and some JSON files just thrown in for good luck. So now I have that DLL. Now that I'm in this directory, I'll go to the command line for it. And I could just do .NET and the name of the DLL. So my app.dll, and you will see the hosting environment, the content root, that it's listening and started. So I can crank up my browser. Good old localhost. And it listens defaultly on port 5000. And there we go. All right, so nice. Tiny little server running. All right, that's it. Not a lot going on. Just tiny executable. I like stuff like this. I like lightweight things. There was a trend in our industry. Things were getting bigger and bigger and bigger. Right? And then JavaScript started becoming really popular. And then everything started getting bigger on the client as well. And then you have these huge honking libraries and programs. And now we're kind of putting everything on a diet and getting back to basics. So we can start with only the things we need, and as we need more, we can keep building up on top of it. All right. So I can go and shut down out of this, and there's my, booted up my server, served out an entire page, and then back to the drawing board, right, and more code. So that's kind of cool. And here's what that request delegate looks like if I wanted to actually kind of write it and use it myself. Maybe I wanted to build a middleware component or part of that host, maybe to extend authentication. So I can make a class, and I can reference that request delegate. And what it does through this pipeline is, since we're going to start moving into the pipeline and middleware, it calls next. So each time something happens and one of those components in the web host builder or the pipeline picks up a request to deal with it, when it's done, it passes the torch to the next component, which then passes the torch until we get to the last component that we defined, and then it just starts going back the way it came from until it hits the client. But as you see, it's just standard working with .NET. I have a class. I'll rely on a few built-in objects. And here I have an invoke, right? Of course, async. And here it takes that context and the authentication. So I can actually go ahead if I wanted to and even start building this myself. Now, authentication is just a small sample. We actually still have all of the .NET authentication. You will never have to build your own authentication. So this is, that's not what I'm saying to do here. This is just an example to show that you can do such a thing if you wanted to. Now, to configure those hosting properties, I mentioned a few of these already. The pathing, right? Start up the content and web root. So I'll show those in Visual Studio. So if I look in VS, and I like zooming. Let me get my zooming tool. Does it have to be the compressed one? No. Just run. Okay, doesn't want to, fine. So here, so you notice the directory structure is a little bit different. And here I have my different settings and startup and all this stuff. So the same kind of thing here in my program, right? Kestrel. But I can also tell it things like use content root. Now the content root is just the root of your project. So in this particular VS solution, it's a tag helper demo for later. So here I could tell it, just plain old use content root, or, right, we'll get the current directory, or I can actually supply a specific directory if I don't like the root being the directory. Then I can also tell it if I want use IIS integration, so that this way I might be building on Kestrel for now, but a lot of us are still going to have to deploy to IIS for a while to come. My apologies, but you may have to, right? Or working with a, you know, third-party hoster. That's always fun. Not so bad with FTP, but. So I could tell it use IIS. Also, if I wanted to use a startup, right, we could do that too. So maybe that code such as this. I'd probably not want this in my program main. But if I were to have this in an app, I'd probably want it in a startup. So I could take that out, move it to a startup. So maybe do something like this, startup.cs. And I give it a namespace, console appsy it knows. And in here, I need a class called startup. All right, and that should probably be public because we want to see it. And in here, configure. And the configure usually takes something like an IAP location builder and I think a context, something like that. But I can move it into something like this and I may have to do a using, right? So it's my ASP.NET core builder, right? ASP.NET core builder namespace. And good old write async is in here, right? So you can see the different namespaces. I have an HTTP namespace. I have a builder namespace to build the web host as well. So I would do something like this, configure it, stick it over here in startup, and then back in the program, main, instead of having that, I would only need the configuration, and then I could say use startup and point it to that startup file or startup class, rather. All right, so I could do something like that. And then at the end, eventually, I'll do a host.run on there. Why are you yelling? Blah, blah, blah. That's okay. All right. So I would do something like that to get that up and working. The web root is another one. This is a little change. So you may have noticed the web root. And then it's almost like they took IIS for moving over to Kestrel and all that. It's almost like we took IIS and just crammed it in there. Kind of looks like that. All right, no more C, INetPub, web root, just cramming it in here. No, the web root's still out there too if you have IIS proper. But notice what's in here. Yeah, that kind of stuff, right? JavaScript libraries, good old jQuery, right? We'll never get rid of that. All right, I don't think the world, that's the world safety blanket for web developers, right? jQuery. Your CSS content, static files, right? So any images or whatever you're going to serve up that is not dynamic, that can all go under your web root. So if it is something that ASP.NET or MVC is using, it's going to go somewhere under the project root. So maybe, you know, your controllers folder or models or some folder under the project root. But if it's static content, it should go under the web root. And you can, everything's configurable, so you can move this stuff around. It's just that by the tradition or convention that it ends up in here. So if I were to do that, then I would make sure that I do have the content root so it knows where it is. And something else I'd probably want to stick in here is use static files as well. So I can do another using for that and tell it to use static. And then, of course, you get things like your environment, and in case you keep forgetting the name of your application like I do, then you can actually code for that. That's not going to help me. So we build the host. You get that web host builder and set it up however you need to. And then we need to run the host. Well, that one's kind of easy. That was the, right back in here, host.run. That was, yeah, that's very non-climactic. It's just host.run. We've set it up. Then it'll go ahead and actually runs that host. That actually sets up, starts the server, and then that request delegate is up and running in action. Now I'm using Kestrel. There's a slide in here with a warning about don't use Kestrel for internet. Try not to laugh. Don't use Kestrel for internet-facing sites. Not yet, please, people. Little boo-boos may happen. Right, so if you go to any of our docs or you see any of the PMs giving a talk, that's our warning. You can, but the strong suggestion is to make sure you run it through a secure reverse proxy first, right, until we make sure we have it completely nailed. So outside of that, though, if we wanted to, you can even build your own server. Why not? Right? Yes, because open source, we just build things now. So there's actually these run off of what's called the little iServer interface. So I can come into any project and just add in a file for a server and then come in here and make a class, whatever I want to call it. My server is fine. And this would inherit from iServer. And because I have, yes, of course I need a using. There we go. And that's out of my hosting.server. And it's still yelling because, you know, whenever I implement an interface, you know that this is coming, right, where I need to actually do the implementation that I claimed I would do. All right, so I will go ahead and do that. So we can just see what it looks like. You have this iServer. And basically what any server is, Kestrel, IIS, when you think about it, and you cut through all the bells and whistles, it's just a collection of features. So those features might be handling an incoming request or sending an outgoing request, or anything that a server does is wrapped up in a collection of features. So if you wanted to build your own little very specific web server that only accepted requests maybe from a very specific location and only did certain things, this is a perfect thing to do. Rather than having any other server that does general purpose HTTP request serving, right? Requests and responses. So you can do stuff like that. So here I would implement collections of features. Also a start, right? So in here is where I can take that application and I would, you know, tell it, go ahead, I need you to use that request delegate and plug into all that good stuff. And then things like disposing and all that. But this is how we would go about to start to write our own web server. Most of the time, it's probably going to be a little more involved, right? Well, you're going to actually have some things that you want to do with the server, even if they're very specific, that would be outside of the scope of a demo. So you can build your own stuff with iServer. That's just fine. All right. I find it a little handy exercise that lets you dig into a lot of the .NET inner workings. So actually, if I pull that up in Visual Studio, let me see if it'll do it in code sometimes. Yeah, okay, well, no, that's really... Yeah, let's see if I could pull this up in Visual Studio. Let's see, my app. But we'll do this. I'll just do open project in Visual Studio, and I'll open that project.json. And when I do that, it should just open that whole folder and bring in everything. There we go. All right, so it picks that out right away. So here in my server, if I do my good old F12 and I go to definition, that's what I wanted. Sometimes it's hard to get that in VS Code. But there you could see some more details on the implementations. I could keep digging down and going to see the definitions and all that good stuff as well. Okay, you could go away now. Oh, there's the slide. Keep off the internet. How many times have I been told that? So just that warning again. Not yet. We'll let you know when. All right, the Kestrel people will let me know when. Then I will let you know when. Or just do it at your own peril. But you've been warned. All this stuff works with this other piece called the core module. This was called an HTTP. For a while, we used HTTP handlers in the stack. And then it was called something like HTTP handle request for a while. And then we settled on core module. And basically, this is what receives your request and takes requests in, just forwarding, which is what happens anyway behind the scenes when we're working with things like IIS and other executables anyway, right? There's some forwarding going on between processes, right? So when a request comes in through IIS, it'll just forward it to your app. Now, it does that for ASP.NET anyway. Right? But ASP.NET core module is a native IIS module. Right? So it'll forward everything, certs, the app offline, all that good stuff for you. It points IIS at the content root for you so that you can have content and actually serve up the static files. Otherwise, your site would work great, except all your images would be those little X's because it wouldn't be able to serve them up, which I kind of find hilarious because if you forget to do that, everything works great, but you just get little X's. And you can publish to IIS and use webconfig to set up the core module. At the high level, it just receives any request, and then it starts up. When I did that .NET run, basically the same thing. Instead of WP, that should be WPW3. But instead, it'll run .NET or whatever your app is called. And the app forwards the requests, or ACM forwards to the app. The app processes the request, returns to ACM, which sends back to IIS, which sends back to the client. All right, so it's just a little bit of chaining and coupling, or decoupling, rather, between these systems. Architecting it this way allows us to have the new modularity in the pipeline and to be able to have those discrete components. If they were tightly coupled, where this is all doing this all in one module, it wouldn't work so well. And that's why we had, giant IIS as the beast that is in the past. With those, if we're using ACM, then here's the environmental variables that you get. Any environmental variables now are ASP.NET core and an underscore whatever. You can make your own, and you can actually set them up by going into, if you're in Visual Studio, the project properties. If I come over to the debug tab, you'll notice things like ASP.NET core environment. Now, the environmental variable is available whether you're using ACM or just Kestrel. But if you're using ACM, you also get port and path and token as well as environmental variables. Middleware, it's all about middleware. So everything is middleware, just about, Which is interesting. If everything's in the middle, what is the middle? I figure that out one day. Probably not today. One day. So static files, just serving that up is middleware. Routing, middleware. Right? Security, middleware. Modules, middleware. It's all middleware. If there's not middleware for you, make your own middleware. Right? So you just write code, stick it in there, we're good. It's basically the gist of it. And here's how it works with the request delegates. So the request comes in, and then it gets sent to middleware, which calls next to the next piece of middleware. I think you notice how this goes, right? And then it comes back through the pipeline. So that's what I was describing before. Now, you don't specifically have to call next unless you're building middleware. But if you're using, say, static content or any of the, you know, routing, et cetera, those things call next for you. How it knows which one to do first is how the middleware is defined in your configuration, right? So here in main or in the startup, right? So if I have a startup somewhere, there we go. You'll see a lot of middleware in here, right? So first setting up the startup constructor with hosting. All right, and here's where you get to see a little bit more of the development, right? And we have configure services and configure. I've mentioned the use methods before, but you'll also notice a bunch of add methods too, and services dot. So in a startup.cs, you'll by convention have this configure services for many things. Right, for the small demo I'm doing, I didn't need it, but this is your nice collection of services. And from here you could see, oh, this is where I'm using EF, and I'm setting that up. And here's where the identity services. So this is all part of the that middle component. Then I kind of say, hey, I'm actually going to use MVC here. That would be nice, right? Because otherwise I'm just using just plain old Kestrel. Yeah. And then DB context and some other things. When we get down to configure, right? So there's the configure with the I application builder. And in here is where I can say, use static files. Now, I talked about these usings before, right? Use static, use identity, and good old use MVC. So this one, probably familiar with from routing for some time now. So this has not changed. It's just that we're saying, hey, use MVC, and here is my route table. So we're going to, or my entry in the route table that I'm setting up. The way routing works is basically the same. There's a few little tiny tweaks in which one prevails if you have a clash in routes or what would be a clash. But other than that, there's no major changes to routing that'll give anybody problems out of the box, or that should. And we set all of this up here in our configure. So startup is a good place for all of these. All right, if I continue with the program CS, that'll get really big when all we really need to do is kick this stuff off out of main. All right, so here I have a couple of usings, but then startup is what goes and configures the rest. Services, the middleware, and that pipeline. All right, so anytime I've called with the use, like use MVC, et cetera, that order is the order that shows up here. So it's the order that you specify. Right. For routing, just so you know, it's always an iRouter implementation, and that creates a request delegate for you if one is not created yet. And it implements the route templates. The route templates are just what we saw in Visual Studio in startup down here. Right? So that's our template right here. Hint, because it says template. It's kind of easy now. Right. So that's our template. And then the builder builds the route table, creates a route collection of iRouters. It should be a capital R right there. Right. So routing is basically the same. Now off of the hosting and the core framework stuff and the more of the flashy side of things, looking at views. By and large, how we create views has not changed, right? The MVC pattern has not changed. A view is still that thing that the client is going to see at some point. We're going to generally produce some HTML and send it to the client with the view. Or if you're using something like Angular, you may send down a minimal view and populate it from the client. One of the new features of being able to work with views is adding in what's called a tag helper. And we can, of course, use built-in tag helpers. We can author our own. Now, to quick see what tag helpers are all about, to use them first, we go into any view. And I have a view here for, doesn't matter which one, any of them, for people or person. And you'll notice something a little different. Actually, let me open one more file, too. Let's see. One that will have some old stuff in it. Layout's good for that. So we're used to this, right? HTML, HTML. Oh, and then these things, right? HTML helpers from ASP.NET 4.6 and below. And how it would work in the traditional sense is we would have some HTML, and then we switch to a helper. So it, you know, just breezes through the HTML. Then it sees the helper, and that's actually C# code that runs. It's a little bit of inline script. So anytime we see that at, we know that that's a little bit of C# code. And here in the layout, this is not too bad, but I'm pretty sure we've all seen that page where it may have been written well, but nonetheless, you're going from HTML to script to HTML to script within the same page, and it makes your eyes, the context switch, makes it slows you down a little, right? Because you're switching, right? Anytime we have a context switch. So the solution to that, to make smooth looking at your code, whatever the term is for that. I'm sure there's a comp sci term, but it's been a while since I was in college. So we built these tag helpers. So tag helpers can be an entire tag, or it could just be an attribute that you're going to stick in a tag. Make your own attribute. Some of the built-in complete tag helpers, oh, these are my favorites, environment. So I set up those, or I didn't have to set it up, Visual Studio did. The environmental variable that I showed here, ASP.NET Core underscore environment, that, being that it's set in this case to development, means that when the layout sees this environment tag, because that's not HTML, just an FYI there for anybody who didn't know that, environment. Here, if I'm in development, why don't we serve up these style sheets? And if I'm in staging or production, how about we serve it up from perhaps a CDN, right? And give some of these other pieces of information as well. So this is fantastic. You would have to write this yourself. And for a programmer, I kind of don't like writing code, actually, right? That's kind of, in a way, it's like golf. The point of golf is to play less golf, right? Coding, like the point of good coding is to do less coding, right? So it's kind of like that. You would have to write it yourself. Well, now it's done for us. So I think that's just fantastic. And in addition to that, with some of the new dependency injection, or yeah, it's kind of old hat by now, I guess, but you can actually inject some pieces that will take a look and examine the environment and give you the variable dump, if you want to, in a view. So you can actually even inject into a view now that we have it. And that's actually what's happening here in behind the scenes. Now you'll notice, yay, fun color coding for a change. Nice purple, right? So we get the purple stuff. So whenever you see purple, you know it's a, unless your editor has a different color scheme, the default color scheme, you get this cool little purple. So here, environment, yeah. But link is an HTML tag, but it shows up as purple. But why? Because you have these little ASP dash. So if I either see a purple tag or an ASP dash, then I know it's a tag helper. So a tag helper, again, could be a complete tag, but it can also just be a piece of a tag, such as for an anchor. Here I can give an MVC area, the controller, and the action. If I take these out, Look, it's just a tag. Now it's a helper. It's a tag. It's a helper. See how that works? So it's nice. So you just have, you can go back and forth between them. So you can take your old HTML and you can then make them into tag helpers, and then it'll integrate and play with your models and the MVC system. So it works great for pretty much anything. So if I come over to edit, you'll see, especially with inputs, right? So labels, right? ASP for the age property of a person, or the validation summary. Input type equal hidden, ASP for ID, right? So you'll see these ASP-4s. And, you know, you get good IntelliSense with these, right? So you'll see them in here. Oh, that's the queue, right? Got to get ready to go. But nice, tag helpers. So either the attribute or the whole tag. If you want to author and make your own tag helper, make yourself a tag helpers directory. Not mandatory, just tradition and notation or convention. And then you might be expecting this, but a class, and it inherits from tag helper. Oh, yeah. Yeah, we didn't whip anything new out there. It's just inheriting again. And then what we do is you can just write your code. Now, if I want to use an attribute, I just make a public property. Oh, that's so easy. That's awesome, right? A public property. So if I was going to make my own custom email tag helper, then here I can set up the mail to. And then we override the process, because there's always an override. You know, when you inherit, there's going to be an override. That or it ain't fun. So process. And, of course, I have the context and the output to deal with. And first thing I'll do is set up the tag I want to work with. Right, just the bare tag name, A, P, div, whatever. Right, so that's my tag name for the output. So in this case, it'll replace anything you have with email, and it renders an anchor, right? So I would actually put the word email, but ASP.NET will render an anchor. Then I can go ahead and write some code, lots of code there. And then I can set up some of those attributes. All right, so you see I could do the attributes.setAttribute. That's very JavaScript-y as well. And then I could go ahead and tell it to set content. So it's really nice, again, with that whole, you know, light .NET way of doing things. So once I've created this little tag helper, if I want to use it, if it's just a nice little email tag helper, maybe in the about page is a good place. So I could come in here and, oh, purple, see, right away. And then I could just say, hey, like mail to contact. And then if I go ahead and run this, like I have to wait like 10 minutes just to see an email. Here, there we go. No, I didn't want that to store. Stop that. I accidentally click on the wrong things all the time. Stop that. So people, oh, wait, now I just went about. There we go. So then it makes, it just outputs that. If I view source, I think you know what's coming. It's an anchor. Yes, that was a spoiler. So, all right, so if I see way down in here, there's a little anchor in there. Thank you, F12 tools, for not responding somewhere in here. Yep. So pretty easy to author the tag helpers. Oh, one more thing. Oh, I almost forgot. So one more thing we need to do for now, just to tell it that we do indeed have a tag helper. And it is, like, this particular class, whatever class it is. We do have to go into the view imports, which kind of does what it says, right? It's importing data for views. And we need to tell it that we do have our own custom tag helper. So in my case, I just do an at tag. There's a small irony here. Do you guys see it? The fact that we're using HTML helpers to add a tag helper. I love irony. So here I'm adding a tag helper. My tag helpers, my whole library, right? Tag helpers demo, got them all. You can individually list them out if you want. Be pedantic, that's fine. As you see the ASP.NET Core tag helpers, I like them so much I put them in here twice. And we could get rid of that. All right, but for your own custom ones, you should see this in here, but you will want to add your own, right, to add one or more tag helpers. So that, once you do that, then your tag helper is registered, if you will. And the views can then see it, turn it purple, and do that cool rendering for you. Also, as always, we get little opt-outs. I want to add all of them, but you. Right? That particular tag helper, just that one. So another thing you could do with tag helpers, if you really, really like the old server, web server controls that much, this makes you feel better, you can prefix them. Just do an @ tag helper prefix, and then you could force your team to do this, right? Whatever you want to call it, TH, my tag helper, the name of our business, drive them nuts with it, because everybody loves that. Actually, those two people like it, and they got that feature. All right, so you could do that and tell it use the prefix. Versus HTML helpers, I think we see where that's going, right? Tag helpers attach to HTML elements. You notice no eyesores. It's smooth looking at the code as opposed to the context switch of HTML helpers. As you also noticed, you can have both in the same view. Totally cool. Razor doesn't care. Razor is so awesome. It'll parse anything you throw at it. It's like a garbage disposal. Just parses anything, rolls with it. So there you go. Tag helpers, less jarring and more cool than HTML helpers, but you don't have to throw out your HTML helpers. Totally could use both. We already mentioned this stuff for authoring and showed you that code. There's also a process async. We didn't forget about async, right? Async is kind of first class. We also, partial views are still a thing, and view components, right? So just other ways to work with views. Partial views did not change. View components are just kind of like an updated partial views in the way that tag helpers are updated HTML helpers, if you will. So view components lets you modularize your views as well. So, and I think we're going to get thrown out of time. So, 3 minutes over. So I'll hang around for questions until the next speaker kicks me out. So, and thanks, everybody, for coming.